faith. From having acted with faith consistently previously, until gradually, firm faith. And then goes beyond. Faith that has full support of all scriptures and can't be broken in any circumstance. But for our purposes, even in the practice stage, the answer to your question is yes. We don't have to, even before we actually execute. So then we go to practically execute. There are some further tests, and generally those tests are not out there, but they're in here. How strong is that conviction? Because it's not just a matter of knowing the technology of how to encounter the material energy and do a good job of it. It's more a matter of faith in that principle. I may not be so like driving a car. I may not know how to maneuver in difficult traffic, but I know the base, so I'll ride in a safe country road and I'll get from point A to point B, and I'll just continue to practice and gradually learn the subtleties of the whole thing. And so in different circumstances the application I'd be able to perform. Not get ruffled, just or as in any other activity. I mean, dealing with the material energy. Material energy can get complex real fast sometimes. It doesn't change the principle of bhakti, Krishna's protection, Krishna's spiritual energy. Amazing characteristics of having Prabhupada's association was he was able to convince us, or we became convinced that whatever he said, the impossible was within reach. He empowered persons with faith to just reach out and have the spiritual world in your hand, or accomplish some just amazing thing. A little insignificant somebody, or a few somebodies doing something together. In practical execution, just based on faith in the principle. Spiritual Krishna's spiritual energy is right there.
Thinking about this a long time, but it may come out a little disjointed. I'll try to focus. The four and a half levels of devotees described started with the Jnana Mishra Bhakta. Uh-huh. I thought it was conspicuous by its absence. I thought it was the Karma Mishra
Bhaktas. Yeah.
Conspicuous by its absence, and I also remember Bhakti Vinod Thakur saying that the Kanishka Adhikari is actually not even really a devotee, but we'll consider them a devotee so that the devotees can associate with them and give them mercy. otherwise you don't associate with non-devotees. And I was thinking, so that's the stage where I am, or lower, and so not even really considered a devotee by Sanatana Goswami's standard. And then on the other side, the other end, you have the devotion, which is supposed to be our goal, the devotion of the residents of Vrindavan. And a vast gulf between them, such a vast gulf that even someone so qualified in his intensity as Gopa Kumar had to go through, you know, whole like yuga cycles and, you know, lifetimes and billions and zillions of years. And then there's Prabhupada's, he at least had some hope and expectation that it's something we could attain in one life.
Sure.
And at the same time, he was also sometimes despairing of his devotees doing it in one life. So given the fact that it's such a rare thing and difficult thing, and it may actually take, realistically speaking, many, many lives before we could attain that highest thing, how can we feel about that, and how should it impact our practice and our seriousness of sadhana?
Nice question. Well, I can think of three different things. One is that having said all of what you said, Prabhupada, maybe I should put this one in the third position, but Prabhupada gave on several occasions very explicit reassurances that if one dedicates this lifetime to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a very focused and dedicated way, that even if there's some shortfall at the time of death, Lord Chaitanya will personally intercede, appear in the mind of that soul, and take them to Krishna.
That's also like a very deep statement that,
yeah,
you know, could be taken like today, Dina Bandhu, like you're expecting some kind of magic at the time of death.
It's one who has faith in the words of the spiritual master doesn't see it as just some kind of magic, because these realms are not possible without faith in the words of the spiritual master. In any case,
true.
So then another response is that, taking, as you have undoubtedly done, having said what you said, you've undoubtedly taken a look at what are the alternatives. And in assessing the alternatives, it's not a difficult choice, choosing this alternative. And if there's something that's worth striving for, if I'm going to strive for something, let it be something that's worth striving for, whatever it takes.
Because
otherwise, how can I be enthusiastic for something that's not worth striving for? Let me strive for that which is worth striving for, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. And blended with that one is the descending mercy, and it's not my own qualification, but it's the descending mercy. Therefore, to make this one life as part of a sequence of several lives, however many, let this one life be like the Chakora bird eagerly seeking the descending mercy. Like we've been spending time going to the temples and samadhis in Govardhan and places of Krishna's pastimes. And it's very important, as I indicated on the first day of our parikram, very important to be in a prayerful mood, meaning specifically in a humble mood, calling for the mercy of these places, the Dham, the devotees, so many, many, many saintly persons who have traversed this territory and perfected their lives and have left wonderful teachings, guideposts and favors and blessings, and like with Uddhava, let a dust particle come and touch my body. So that's very deep humility. But let us approach that kind of humility. By the time that we spend here in Vrindavan, you're spending much more time than we are. You're going to be staying here for close to a year. Or anyway, some good part of a year. Good part of a year. So, in our case, we're less fortunate than you.
Only according to the calendar.
Yeah, according to the calendar. We're less fortunate than you. So, but for all of us, you and all the rest of us, the time that we spend here should be with that. And the point that I want to emphasize here is calling for the descending mercy of those great personalities and Krishna and Radha or Chaitanya. When we go to Radhakund, the samadhis of the different personalities, and genuinely offer prayers to those personalities. And remember the gift that they gave, on all those things. So, the more that we can do that, we're eliminating some lifetimes. Just by that spiritual gesture. And a third thing, which is, I can't speak with the same force or conviction, but it's mentioned in Gopi's commentary here, that Narada is speaking those words to Gopakumar, not to discourage him, but to encourage him. Now, how is it encouraging? Because it sounds from what you said. You didn't say it this way, but it sounds like a little discouraging, or But at least I take it. It kind of goes back to the second one. But if I'm going to endeavor for something, let it be something that's really worthwhile. However rare it is. I want the genuine thing. I think we've heard it twice in presentations here. Was it the sannyasi from Radharaman Temple? But these different qualities that make up the personality of Srila Prabhupada. One was this determination to achieve the truth. I want something that's real. And I may not have the qualification, but that's the one thing. Something that's tangible, eternal, substantial, and so what Narada is saying to Gopakumar is go for it. Not what's the use? Go for it. And I'm going to give you the means, because I know you want to go for it. Here's the means. And he lays it out. Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita that it, in his, I'm trying to recall exactly where this reference is, but when one defines a goal, it becomes then possible to traverse towards the goal. But if you don't have a clear sense of the goal, you can be very enthusiastic, but you don't know where to apply that enthusiasm. So the goal may be far, but at least I know what the goal is.
Actually, that's a purport that I've always sort of taken shelter of when it comes to thinking about this.
So, kind of like the second one, whatever it takes. I'm not going to settle for some imitation, something short or something less. That's, again, this factor of determination.
Although in that purport he says gradually, by slow degrees, we approach the goal, so that may be...
Whatever it may be.
They just have to accept that as...
Whatever it may be. Whatever is... But at least from... So Krishna's timetable is whatever it is. And from my side, let me apply myself. So your question was, how do I deal with those kinds of considerations? So, it's all in Krishna's hands, not in mine. That's a fact. And from my side, all that I can do is make a very sincere endeavor to do my very best. I would say, not that other persons who aren't here don't fall in this category, but persons who are here are persons who, just by being here, coming to the Dham at Kartik to undergo these austerities of Govardhan Parikram and all of what we're doing, there's some commitment to achieve that. It's not just tourism. It's a commitment to achieve coming closer to that goal, each of us from our different positions. And we need to bear our heart to Krishna and to the purifying potencies of the Holy Dham and the great personalities and whatever conduits of descending mercy we can latch on to, and fill our hearts with that instead of and thus displacing the false shelters that we have and other things. With the language gradually in steps.
I think he said gradually by slow degrees you approach the goal. What a goal is approached.
Personally, I don't have a problem with that, because I believe that that's the effective way anyway. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement or definition that progress is a series of gradual steps in the right direction towards the goal. I find that that's progress, and when there's this quantum thing, it doesn't last, because there isn't the realization and support to keep it, to sustain it. So that kind of, that's fine with me. Personally, it's fine.
So that's just the natural way that progress is made.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And Prabhupada is encouraging us go the whole distance, but not go the whole distance by jumping over. Go the whole distance by the gradual by steps process. That's the natural and it's fine by me process. That's Krishna's timetable. Whatever Krishna's time be, if it's 1, 3, 5, 10, 12, 100,000, whatever it is. And each of us are at a different stage in any case, however far along that timeline. What Krishna wants to see is that we're making very sincere strides and efforts to achieve his shelter. That's whatever our position is, Krishna wants to see that. Yeah?
I think the gopis were the highest recipients of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And gopis were quite plain and simple folk. They probably didn't think of Jnana or Karma Yoga.
Neither.
And therefore, and their love for Krishna was unalloyed by any of these.
Yeah.
And they probably, and therefore they did not even know what is the liberation, and they did not therefore have a goal of liberation. So they went all they have is a pure unlimited love for Krishna.
Yeah.
So if we are to take the gopis as a role model, therefore, for all things, we should then not even think of a goal, liberation as a goal or whatever, or if not bother about jnana or karma or anything, and somehow imbibe the qualities of the gopis or the gopis marshmallows and live a life like theirs, which is nothing but love of Krishna. Is that statement correct?
If we're, again speaking from the incrementalist point of view, yes, and we should approach that goal according to our capacity to approach that goal. In other words, if we can do that just by acknowledgement of it and sustain that, all power to us, or that individual who can do that. But for most persons, approaching in stages is more realistic and natural. And therefore, because of our conditioning and our limitations and our lack of spiritual capacity, not striving for liberation, but at least like this, what Brihat Bhagavatamrita is doing is making a distinction between the two. Following your point, the gopis may not even have such a clear distinction. We're receiving it because we're not on their level. We require at least making the distinction and then selecting the other, and not the goal of liberation. Approaching in stages that position. Does that respond? Yeah.
How do we set the goal, Maharaj?
How do we do it?
How do we set the goal? Because we hear from scriptures that the love of gopis is the highest. And then the successive lower stages of love for Krishna. Love for Vaikuntha residence and different degrees of love. But as a practicing devotee, I don't have any idea of any of those. So how do I set a goal? How does a sadhaka set up a goal? And what does it really mean to set up a goal? Because even if I set a goal, okay, I want to reach the love of gopis, it doesn't really mean much to me at this stage. And although
it doesn't, but on the other hand, it does. I'll make an argument that in favor of it does in a certain sense. It doesn't to support your statement. It doesn't in a practical sense because it's so elevated and we're not at all so elevated. So it's not a realistic goal. But in the other sense, it's a goal because of to whatever degree we have faith in the scriptures and the acharyas and even the present persons who are helping to guide us and train us. The scriptures, the acharyas, and those people, they're all saying the same thing. That is a goal, as I said before, very far, but it's very clearly a goal, just like coming here to Vrindavan. One thing this does is makes very clear any other conception of spiritual attainment. Where is that relative to this one? It's somewhere lesser, depending on what it is, somewhere lesser, like these sequences that are being identified here. So that's a goal that we're hearing from Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a thinkable goal after one has come to the stage of fixed nishtha, after nishtha. So then a goal for me could be striving to become, to come to that stage of nishtha, which means fixed in my devotional practices and gradually overcoming unwanted things. But that's not, you can say that's a very, very important and maybe a lifetime goal, but it's not, it's an intermediate goal, although it may be a lifetime goal. It's not an ultimate goal. And we know that by the grace of the acharyas who have given us these teachings and scriptures themselves and persons who are repeating those teachings. But just as we heard Narada say, there's so many other references, but just the one we just read this evening, Narada is saying the means of achieving that goal is just by glorifying those who are in that position. Although we're way down here, we can approach that goal, even from way down here, to approach the anartha nivritti and the nishtha stage, by doing those things that will also help us attain that goal. That's the goal. Achieving Krishna's full mercy, which we're not eligible for right now. But Krishna is very, particularly in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna is most merciful. Here. But here. Krishna Prema Padayate. Therefore, we worship the feet of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And those who are at their feet call upon their mercy. So I can achieve this more tangible goal so that it's part of the progression towards an ultimate goal. Prabhupada told a story, you know, the story of the man whose job it was to pull a barge with ropes, and he would earn a little money, and as he was pulling the ropes he was thinking, I'm going to save up my money so that when I have enough money I can line the path with pillows. I won't have to hurt my feet when pulling the barge down the path. And Prabhupada's comment is, little does he know that when he has wealth, he's not going to continue to pull the barge. He'll have some other occupation. But he's thinking about his future situation in terms of his present situation. So, there's many similes, but one simile is, because we have the great opportunity of very, very advanced souls who are indicating what the goal is, we don't have to compare ourselves to that goal, because we don't have, it's not within our scope to, as what you're saying, what I understand what you're saying is, I don't even have the capacity to think of that as a goal from my present condition. But know from our acharyas, as you spiritually progress, that will be more of a goal to think about. So, but the things that you may do now, the things that you are doing right now, are helping you achieve that goal. Being here in Vrindavan, doing the things that we're doing while we're here in Vrindavan. And that's part of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, of disclosing these things through the mercy of the six Goswamis to people in general, like us.
My second question was about this term, pure devotion is very rare. I wanted to understand the term rare. Is it like a statistical term that out of so many people who try only to achieve it, or is it like only so many few people try it sincerely? That's why it is rare.
Oh. And actually that statement that of the six characteristics of pure devotional service, one of them is rarely achieved. Commentary on that part of Nectar Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is that corresponds to Bhava Bhakti. The first two correspond to Sadhana Bhakti, second two correspond to Bhava Bhakti, and the third set of two, or pair of two, correspond to Prema Bhakti. But still, is it statistical or is it a qualitative? It's both, because we're hearing Lord Chaitanya disclose to Sanatana Goswami, or here Narada is disclosing to Gopal Kumara, that statistically and qualitatively, both. Very rare.
But like, if the same number of people try the same sincerity, will all of them achieve it, or then it is...
Well, even amongst those who make some attempt to achieve it, they may not achieve it. They may not have proper guidance to achieve it. Part of the thing that's supposed to be transpiring now, I mean literally, now, and while we're in Vrindavan, just those two nows, besides this life and this lifetime, is the strengthening of faith. That so one component, the component of faith that you're addressing is this attainable? And the strengthening of faith is to say, yes, it's attainable. And now going back to Acharya's question, well, how long will that attainment take? And it's a sliding scale. It's Krishna's time. It can be, or it can be wrong, or somewhere in between. And that's up to, from our position, that's up to Krishna. But let me make my most sincere endeavor. Let me show to Krishna that I want that which Krishna wants for me. You're training your son. So, if that quality can be exhibited by your son, where you know very clearly, if that glorious moment comes when it becomes very, very clear to you that your son has understood that his greatest happiness of life is to see to your happiness, whatever that is, and what you want because of love for your son is that he's full and mature and responsible, and so with Krishna also. Krishna wants us to become all those things. And is there some limitation to the potencies of Krishna wanting something to happen and it happening? Don't sell Krishna short. So that's part of the nurturing of faith that we're supposed to be undertaking right now. Krishna wants. Therefore, let me endeavor It's not within my power to make what Krishna wants happen. But it's within Krishna's power to make what Krishna wants happen. So if I can do something to make what Krishna wants happen, by just by endeavoring to do that, and Krishna makes it happen, how wonderful. Therefore, full effort. Non-stop. With full faith. Not in me, in Krishna. I missed the last part of it. Is that special form of dhanya something that develops?
Special form of dhanya develops when a devotee realizes the sweetness of Krishna. Huh. And you said that transcendental dhanya can only be... for transcendental dhanya to be achieved, one must love Krishna. How
can we actually realize
the sweetness of Krishna and love Krishna when we don't have that
humility
in our heart?
Well, it's not the same question, but it's very similar to Krishna Leela's question. We're still dealing with what we don't have. We're dealing with what we do have instead of your question is what we don't have. We're still dealing with our identifications with true false ego, with illusory things, attainments, position, recognition, so that's all that stuff, worldly existence. And what we don't have is, but we do have those. Love for Krishna is innately there. It is there. And each one of us, in some unique way, say, not that we're special, but this, again, even the commitment of being here in Vrindavan amongst the however many living entities there are in this world, or taking up sincere efforts of devotional practices every day. That in itself is something very unique, and the qualitative efforts that we're making to improve, so that's some glimmer of indication of our attraction for Krishna, at least in the practice stage. So that's very, very valuable and should be very carefully nurtured. So our attention can go there as the need of awakening our love for Krishna. Awakening. Developing further attraction for Krishna, attachment for Krishna, love for Krishna. But there are things blocking that. That's these unwanted things. So that needs to be addressed by the strength of our devotional practice and carefully discarding other things. The process of sadhana bhakti, in other words. In the from vajana kriya, nartanda vritti, and nishtha stages, at least, in that region, that realm of the practicing devotional service. I'm saying that love for Krishna is there in a less mature state, because looking at Rupa Goswami's definition of uttam bhakti starts with faith and ends with prema, but it is the whole range is bhakti. So if the fruits and flowers are bhava and prema, and the seed is our initial faith and our devotional practices, then everything in between is also part of that same unfolding of prema bhakti. in different stages. So it is there. We have a little Tulsi tree, Tulsi plant, that doesn't yet have manjaris. Does that mean it's not a Tulsi? Only when it has manjaris is it a Tulsi. I would worship it. Just at a different stage. So that attraction for Krishna that we have, it's the most valuable thing that we have. It should be very, very carefully nurtured. Is that kind of address you?
How is it that Gopa Kumar, even though he didn't really have the knowledge about Gopa, didn't really have any realization, but how did he develop this intense desire of taking the shelter?
Well, the spiritual master who originally gave him this mantra was the personality of Godhead in disguised form. So that helped a lot. And just by his ever previous activities brought him to the position of being born as a cowherd boy, that helped. I mean, literally, he's a cowherd boy Govardhan. That's who he was before he met his spiritual master. So he had some natural attraction for Krishna in Vrindavan, even before knowing about Krishna in Vrindavan, you know, in a matter of cognizance, just a natural attraction. And he had capacity for faith. When he heard from his spiritual master, he had faith in that mantra. He had faith in the instruction. He had faith in the person, faith in the instruction from the person, and faith in the mantra, which he didn't understand all that well, you know, in a conscious way, but nonetheless that faith in the mantra was there, faith in the Lord of that mantra. It was a consequence of his faith in that person and his own qualifications he brought. Into that relationship. It might be worth, I don't know if we'll have to, well, let's say we can go back and look at those verses where he meets and what the text says, what the commentary says, so we can look at Gopa Kumara's quality. What is the uniqueness of his circumstance? So that we can understand how what we need to bring to the situation of our making advancement in devotional service. Yeah.
Yes, just a question about the nature of faith, and is it the relationship between faith and certainty? That you were saying that when Srila Prabhupada said, you know, convinced everyone that this was reachable, was it because he already knew and realized it, and so speaking with that force of certain faith, or is it that in having the faith in the realization, and that convinced people? And so how do we go this development?
Well, I would to keep it simple, Prabhupada had purity, and purity was the force. Kamal Krishnamurti has written one book. Well, during the course of completing his undergraduate studies at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, he had to write some papers for that, so he put it together in the form of a book, Faith and Reason, which is a classic thing that scholars do. They look at how can you demarcate these two? Is how much of spiritual progress is based on reason, and how much of it is based on faith, and what is the difference between the two, and all these kinds of things. What Rupa Goswami, just to put it in a very simple form, what Rupa Goswami says is, we used our faculty of reason, just as we're doing right now to some degree, but it's supported, the value of that, or the, if there's any fruit to come of that, it will be because it's subordinate to the principle of descending mercy of Krishna, descending knowledge, descending realization, descending empowerment, descending. So, because of Prabhupada's purity, his speaking was like Krishna's speaking. And Krishna is very powerful, most powerful. And so, when Prabhupada spoke, Krishna was speaking. And that moved people because of the purity. And it moved different people differently according to their faith in Prabhupada. It's reciprocal. It's a two-way thing. Not just because the sun is shining.